equal time. Another viewpoint, other considerations. Equal time.
Good afternoon. I'm Carl Etnayer, your host for Equal Time Radio on Mondays. My theme, as usual, is energy, food, and the local economy at the end of the age of oil. I've got a blog about the same theme. It's called Relocalizing Vermont. It's over at the Vermont Commons website, vtcommons.org. You can just go to there and click on the blog link on the left, or you can type in vtcommons.org/blog. Now, I'm one of the many bloggers there, so to look for my blogs, look for the posts that begin Relocalizing Vermont. Also, audio from this show when I host it, also when Travin hosts it on Tuesdays, is available at the EqualTimeRadio.com website. That's EqualTimeRadio.com. Look for audio from my Monday shows by the end of the afternoon on Tuesdays. If you want to download it and listen to it again or recommend it to someone who didn't get a chance to tune in today. We've got a great show coming up for you today. We're going to be talking with State Senator Ginny Lyons. She's the chair of the Natural Resources and Energy Committee, putting Vermont's energy work in a national context. She recently gave a presentation to Association of Women in Government on why Vermont is leading the nation, or how Vermont is leading the nation on energy work. And we'll listen to her about that and just go over again what energy work Vermont has done in the last years, why that is important, and what needs to be done next. First up, we'll be talking with Barry Simpson. He's a little bit of everything in Warren, including a select board member and an energy efficiency entrepreneur. And we'll talk to him about the need for relocalization and the movement from individual industries to community action. First up, though, let's talk about a couple things. A big story that, of course, we've been following here the last few days is the election in Iran, the contested election results, and the objections of the sides that have been declared the loser. We just heard a story about violence in the street in the AP news. And this is a very, very unusual situation, obviously, in Iran, and very unsettled, and it's hard to tell which direction it's going to go. There are a lot of passions that have been released, and I don't know nearly enough about the situation to talk about exactly what the implications are, except to say, just to note in passing, that in the 1970s, we saw two major spikes in oil prices, both of which led to recessions. One of them was in 1973, when the Arab oil-producing countries and OPEC got together and embargoed the United States because of its support for Israel in the 1973 Israel-Arab War, and prices went up quite a bit after that. And the other was in 1979 as a result of the Iranian Revolution, closed-in production there. And so I don't know what's going to happen in Iran. I hardly know what's happening there today, let alone what's going to happen in the next few days or weeks. But if the unrest there does lead to something which closes down oil production, Iran is one of the top oil-producing countries in the world, and that could have a significant effect on oil prices. I looked at oil prices today just before we went on the air, and what I look at is about half hour delayed from the NYMEX New York Mercantile Exchange, and they had gone up over $71.20 or so, actually over $71.50 earlier this morning, but now they're under the $70 mark, or as of half hour ago. So this is just the typical daily noise you see in oil prices we've seen for the past weeks. I don't detect the markets getting nervous yet, but something to keep an eye out on. There's a lot of talk about the importance of democracy in Iran, and Mark Johnson this morning was talking to former Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, about the significance of the elections there for Israel's relations with Iran, which of course are crucial to Mideast peace. And those are all really important issues, and this affects the price of oil. Calendar items. Just one today. Tonight is a joint meeting of the East Montpelier and the Callis Historical Societies in East Montpelier, but very near the border with Calais, at the Fox Run Farm. It's the home of Paul Cate. And the theme will be sighing, or scything, depending on how you pronounce it, mowing with a scythe. And some of us will be gathering there ahead of time, but at 6 o'clock it begins with a potluck. And please bring your own plate and silverware and cup, as well as something to share at the potluck, and a chair. And then we'll be talking about the history of scything. There'll be a little bit of demonstration of scything, and I'm really looking forward to this. Where is this? By the way, it's on County Road. It's 4080 County Road. If you're coming up from Montpelier, then you go past Horn of the Moon Road, the little former schoolhouse on the left, and it comes up very shortly on the right. Obviously, if you're coming from the other direction, from Maple Corner, then it's on your left, a little bit before Horn of the Moon Road. And if you're coming from Route 12, bypass Montpelier altogether, just come up Horn of the Moon Road and turn left onto County Road. It's a little sign by the side of the road marking the Fox Run Farm. And I'm looking forward to this, because every time I get together with people and mow with a sigh, I get better at it. I've owned one now for about 8 years now, and I've tried using it, doing okay with it, I thought, but not really. And the sharpening it was a bit of a mystery. What angle do I use on it? How often do I sharpen it with a stone? I think it's best if you learn the technique as a kid from someone, or second best is learning it from someone as an adult, and third best is learning it from a book or a video. There is a book called The Scythe Book that has quite a bit of good information, but there's no substitute for sitting down, or not sitting down, standing up, walking around with someone, holding a scythe, having them critique your technique. And Paul Cate and Richard Shiplinski and others have organized, Richard Wiswell also at the Cate Farm, have organized gatherings for people to get together and try scything together. And my technique has been critiqued by them. I do too much chopping and pulling, not enough slicing of the grass stems and the stems of whatever else I'm mowing. And I've been practicing that. I really went to town the other day and scythed the whole bunch of space that I intend to turn into a garden. I'm going to plant some buckwheat, see if it comes up through what I mowed and can really smother those weeds. So learned a lot about that, and look forward to learning some more from these expert sires tonight. So anyway, if you want to come, 6 o'clock tonight at the Fox Run Farm in East Montpelier, just off on County Road, 4080 County Road, and it starts at 6 o'clock. Bring potluck, chair, and something to eat off of. We've got Travin on the line. Hello, Travin.
Hey, Carl. I just was listening to you, and you were talking about the developments in Iran and the turmoil there. And just for your listeners, tomorrow on Equal Time, we're going to have Phyllis Bennis, who's an expert on the Middle East, and who's been following the developments in Iran, as well as some of the fallout from Netanyahu's speech. Turmoil in the Middle East, the Obama administration, and its impact on things like oil prices tomorrow.
And Phyllis Bennis is based in Washington, D.C. at the Institute for Policy Studies,
correct? That's correct. Yeah, she's a senior analyst there who specializes in the Middle East affairs.
And she's been studying this for a long time and always has a lot of good things to say. Travin, thanks for calling in.
Sure. Well, thanks for your show.
Okay. Bye. Bye. And with us right now, we have Barry Simpson, who I'm sure has done a lot of sighing in his time, mowing with a scythe. He is a road commissioner in Warren right now. He's a select board member. He's a deputy emergency coordinator in Warren. And if you heard him on the Mark Johnson show 3 months ago or so, you heard him talking about discovering a large historic 19th century flag in Warren as part of when they were doing a renovation process in Town Hall there. But today we're here to talk to him as an entrepreneur and village activist and visionary of the future of the Mad River Valley. Warren, welcome back to WDEV. Barry Simpson from
Barry
Warren.
From Warren.
I can call you Mr. Warren almost. You've been there long enough and doing almost everything there.
One of the things that I'm not doing right now is I resigned from the select board last summer in order to take a new position, Director of Public Works.
Right.
Which is, but the other things are still correct. I'm still the road commissioner and very active in town affairs, as I have been for for quite a long time, in fact, almost 40 years.
Okay, well, thank you for that correction. And, I'm sure you've done a fair amount of mowing with a scythe in your time.
Well, I have done, and I've also used a tool that my wife, who's from New Zealand, calls a slasher, which is basically, it's a similar to what you'd call a brush hook, but when we started at our place, there was an awful lot of fields around the where we wanted to put our house that had grown up into thick brush, some of which had to be chainsawed, but a lot of it just had to be whacked off with a slasher. So we finally got it into a point where we could use a scythe, and I have used a scythe from time to time. Also, I've used the scythe more often in my role as Father Time in various school plays and so forth. But that's a tool that I can use, but don't frequently use it right now for the purpose that it's intended.
Okay. Well,
but I'm very interested in your scything class there, and that's the sort of thing that I get a lot out of.
Well, come on over if you want.
Well, I'll see if I can.
It is the East Montpelier and Callis Historical Societies, and it's in the paper, so I'm sure it's open to all.
Yeah.
So you're here to talk to us today about your vision for the future of the Mad River Valley in this time of energy scarcity and breaking down of our global food system. You've seen a lot of history in the Mad River Valley as far as people adapting and preparing for this type of breakdown for decades. And do you have some ideas about what it should look like in the future? So why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about your entrepreneurial past there?
Okay, well, I think my contribution, if you could call it that, which it was, it sort of sprang from my design and construction training. And you just mentioned 1973 when the Arab oil embargo created a very different atmosphere in this country as far as the availability and the price of fuel at that time. And my firm, Dirt Road Company, which at that point I was a partner with Charles Hosford of Waitsfield, we conceived a window insulation system. At the time we were building designing and constructing a heavy timber frame with a very effectively insulating outer skin that was made out of 8 inches of expanded polystyrene, basically styrofoam panel. And it had all of the things that was needed at the time to make a very tight, highly insulative home. The only thing that it didn't have was anything except a well-insulated double-glazed window. And we conceived partly for that product that we were designing and producing. And also for other circumstances where we saw a lot of school buildings, churches, and plenty of homes that had basically only single glazing or at the best double glazing with a lot of crackage around the outside of the windows. And so we developed a movable window insulation system called the Comfort Shade, which was basically 4 layers of material that rolled up into a tight roll at the head. And when they were deployed, in other words, when they were let down, they were separated by dowels and tubes, and also by the differential of the temperature of the air inside the shade, pressed it out against flexible seal strips along a channel that ran around the outside of the window.
So basically, you were adding this other layer.
That's right.
Multiple other layers,
yeah.
And you had something that you could pretty easily roll down at night. How many minutes would it take?
Oh, 3 seconds.
3 seconds per window. Okay.
And we still use them actively in my home in the wintertime, and some of them we basically leave down for the winter, the ones that are facing north.
Right.
We don't need to look out that side of the building. The ones that are facing south or east or west, we use actively. And it probably takes, no more than a minute to insulate all of the windows. With approximately on our value of 6.7 over what's there at the window itself, is usually maybe an R2.
We're going to hear more about this project and others in just a minute. Welcome back to Equal Time. I'm Carl Ettinger, and we're here with Barry Simpson. He is talking about the changes that have been made historically in the Mad River Valley and that has in response to rising oil prices and that need to be taken in the future. So Barry, you've been talking about the comfort shade system, which adds quite a bit of R value to existing windows. And one of the myths that I hear people talking about in connection with improving the energy efficiency of homes is that a good first step is to replace the windows. And people say replacing windows is expensive, and you can really save money a lot with a lot less investment through other means, like adding insulation and plugging cracks and that sort of thing. But you've come up with something that you don't have to replace the windows, and you can get the added insulative value. How much would one of these systems cost for an average window?
Well, when we were actively promoting and installing this system, we would charge basically $12 per square foot of window area covered. That would probably be somewhat more if I were to revive this system presently, but it's basically fairly readily available materials, a vinyl window shade material and aluminized mylar
interior. Right. So just to be clear, you're not manufacturing these.
Well,
at the
I'm
time,
still
is that
maintaining,
correct?
And I do a certain amount of replacements for windows that have been or shades that have been either deteriorated or damaged for some reason. But I'm hoping to actively reinitiate this system, and more or less depends on how things develop. One of the things that's happened is that there's newer types of window glazing have become available. There's low emissivity glass and argon-filled glass and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That does provide an improved insulation to the windows. But one of the things that's become apparent to me is that, for one thing, they're very expensive. You usually have to replace the entire window, whereas window insulation devices, and there are several, is one that's been...
Well, let's talk about the future now, actually, since we're running out of time with you here, Barry. You have this history as an entrepreneur. We didn't get a chance to talk about the sort of foment of entrepreneurship that you've seen in the Mad River Valley over the decades around energy efficiency and renewables. But now you see a somewhat different direction in the future, that community actions are going to be at least as important as entrepreneurship. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I think a lot of my thoughts really spring not from within, but from reading different publications. Certainly the Vermont Commons Quarterly is one of those, and another recently is the Transition Handbook by Rob Hopkins, which is sort of like the modern version or the current version of the Whole Earth catalog, which is what everybody back in the 70s was sort of taking all of their ideas and inspiration from that. But I see the towns like Warren and other towns having an important transition to make that will to a great degree determine how successfully they meet the challenges of for oil depletion, climate change, and economic collapse in a world where population is exploding exponentially and the ability to feed that population equitably is becoming more and more doubtful. And so how we expand, how we enter that set of ambiguities as a community is one of the things that I've certainly focused on. And among the things is a transition really from individual entrepreneurs or small partnerships to a circumstance where large communities or communities and groups within those communities really tackle that project of trying to make the transition. Now, I think in the Mad River Valley, we have many groups that are working on various aspects of it. There's a Mad River Sustainability Group. There's a Carbon Shredders. The Mad River Planning District is sort of an official planning agency that covers a lot of these things. Have the Mad River Local Vore, very interested in locally produced food. Have a Valley Futures Network, which is really a group that's looking down the road, down the future. We also have an organization that I'm a director of, Roots Work, which is located at the East Warren Schoolhouse, and still a town-owned two-room schoolhouse. But Roots Work rents that building, and they have community gardens, they have educational programs, they have a small low-power radio station, WMRW, and they're organizing...
100-watt station that I can get even over in East Montpelier.
That's right.
Just because I'm line of sight with it.
Okay.
So... I see the importance of all these community groups working together. Are they something new, something that Warren didn't have in the 1970s?
Well, many of them have developed as a result of the more recent perception that energy is going to become more expensive and less available. There were certain ones of them, certainly the... well, the Warren Planning Commission, among other things, which I was a member of for about 30 years, we did a number of things that really prepared us well, I think prepared the town of Warren at least well for the urgency that we're now facing. One of the things that was a initiative that we undertook, which was called the Meadowland Provision. We identified all of the historically viable farmland and set that aside as an area that development would be discouraged on those particular areas.
Okay. Warren Simpson, Director of Public Works, longtime entrepreneur, Deputy Emergency Coordinator. You still have that position?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jack of many trades in Warren and helping the Mad River Valley move to a more energy pricey, less energy secure future, trying to keep us food secure and warmth secure. Thanks very much for joining us and telling us about your efforts.
Thank you very much, Carl.
And coming up next, we'll be talking with State Senator Ginny Lyons. She is the chair of the Natural Resources and Energy Committee. She'll be putting some of Vermont's energy work in a national context. Back after this.